Hi, this is Sedge Thompson. Welcome to this special audio highlights podcast from West Coast Live. For more information about our shows and other guests and podcasts, wcl.org. My next guest on West Coast Live, as you know, has written a lot about Miami. He was a columnist for many years there. He knows the city inside out. They know him inside out. He also has written with Ridley Pearson wonderful Peter Pan stories that have become amazing musicals in the world. He's won a Pulitzer Prize. I don't know if he's had to hawk it at any time in his life. He's also the brother of Sam, who has played piano for us from time to time, and the brother-in-law of our late, great former producer, Kathy Kamen Goldmark. And he is with us today. We might give him a Sam Barry election bumper sticker.
All right.
Unless he already has them. Will you please welcome the author of Insane City, Dave Barry.
For West Coast Live.
How do you do? Nice to see you. Could you have thanked God for a better city than Miami to ever write about?
No, seriously, Carl Hiaasen has the best line about being a novelist in Miami. He said, "You don't really need an imagination. You just need a subscription to the Miami Herald, because consistently the weirdest things happen." I'm just going to give you one example of if this were to happen, if you were to write this in a book, people would say it was ridiculous, but it happened. I know the guy it happened to, his name is Kurt Ivey, and he was the chief of police of Homestead, which is a city south of Miami. And he, as chief of police, he was asked to speak at a Citizens Crime Watch meeting, an inaugural meeting. So it's a nice night, so they meet outdoors in the patio of some nice home in the suburb of Homestead. Chief of police, Kurt Ivey, is speaking to the group, and it goes really well, right up until he's almost hit on the head by a 75-pound bale of cocaine falling from the sky. This absolutely happened.
That's Carl Hiaasen, that's Elmore Leonard, that's Dave Barry. I mean, it's...
It was a smuggler's plane coming over from the Bahamas, and it was intercepted by a customs service jet. So smugglers are flinging these bales of cocaine out as fast as they can. And they flung like 20 of them out before they were forced down in Naples, which set off a treasure hunt in the Everglades the next day. But seriously, if you wrote a novel, and in there was a scene where the chief of police of this nice town is almost killed by falling cocaine, the critics would rip you apart and say, that's just so over the top. Did you have to make it a Crime Watch meeting? That was ridiculous. But it happened.
And then... What did those alligators do the next day? Like, oh, man.
Yeah, we do have, I've had in my neighborhood alligators in the, you know, streets from time to time. When I first moved to Miami, like the second day I was there, I'm stepping out of my house and to get the newspaper, and I'm barefoot because it's night, and there are crabs all over my lawn. Not crab grass, which I have dealt with in my life, but actual crabs, because it was land crab mating season, which nobody told me about, you know. But it's very big to the crabs. And they're not, they're kind of hostile when they're in that, in this phase. They're like these crabs are kind of, coming toward me, pinching toward, because I guess they think I wanted to mate with their women, which I didn't, you know. I mean, their women were crabs, you know. Maybe that's one of the reason they were mad, I guess. I don't know. But that's routine. Snakes all over the place down there. Have you heard about our Burmese python situation?
Well, there's a character in your book who likes to wear a large python.
Yeah, there is. I have a guy named Dwayne in the book who travels with an albino python named Blossom. And there are guys, and he basically, it's a tourist thing. He thinks tourists would like to come up and get their pictures taken with him and Blossom. But there are guys like that in Miami. And there are guys who I don't think do it for the tourist thing. I think they just think they look cool with a python around their neck, you know? And I don't know. I don't think the women go for that, really, as an example.
But you have otherwise snakes throughout the city?
Well, we have a Burmese python problem. A bunch of Burmese pythons over the decades have gotten loose and gotten into the Everglades, and there are estimates are like could be hundreds of thousands of them, and they get to be like 15 feet long. They have no natural enemies. They're eating everything out there. In the state of Florida, to deal with this, now we don't have drones because we're a state. So the way we dealt with it, and it's still going on as of today, is the Florida Python Challenge. Where and I'm not making this up, we invite anybody who wants to come to Florida to kill our pythons. And whoever kills the most gets a $1,500 prize. Whoever kills the longest one gets a $1,000 prize. But you have to take you have to pay $25. And the best part is you have to take an online course. If you ask anybody who's ever, you know, hunted big snakes in the wilderness, online is the way to learn how to do that, you know. So basically, we have all these amateurs out there. There's 1,000 people who did it, stomping around trying to find these pythons. And it's been almost a month now, and the last count that I saw, hundreds of thousands of pythons, 1,000 python hunters, last count, 41 pythons killed. So meanwhile, of course, probably some mother python gave birth to like 500 new babies. So in other words, the pythons are winning the python challenge. Yeah.
So, okay, so 1,000 people pay $25. There's 25,000. They only give out 2,500 in prize money. Where does the rest of the prize money go?
The Florida State Fish and Wildlife Conservation keeps it to think of new ideas as good as that one, is my guess. Yeah.
Brilliant. You take on the wedding industry in an interesting way in this book. Seth is due to marry Tina, and they go to Miami for the wedding rehearsal. Seth does twittering for a douche manufacturer. And
they told me not to use any salty language on this show, and here you go.
No, that's a French word meaning shower.
Okay, right. Fine. If that's
you see it, WC, and then La Douche, you're taking it right.
If that's what it means to you out here in San Francisco, that's fine with me. I don't like that.
And she is a high-powered attorney, daughter of a multi-billionaire, and works a lot with NGOs. Seth and Tina, he's always wondering sort of like, why are we together?
Yeah, and she... She is kind of real type A person, and she wants to have the perfect wedding. And what inspired me to make this book have a wedding at the heart of it was my son got married a couple of years ago, and he married a lovely woman. I love her. She's great. She's smart. She's intelligent. You know, she's just great. But she went completely insane. You know, the wedding industrial complex gets hold of. You know, and you can understand women think it's very important to plan the wedding. If they let men do it, they would be like skee ball at the reception. So you know. And men are just not, I mean, I don't mean to be gender stereotyping here, but we know it's true. Men don't care that much about the wedding. And she cares more and more and more and more, and she's into the florist. And eventually, the caterer, the wedding, that become very important to her. The groom becomes like a minor appendage in her life. You're not even sure he will be invited to the wedding, you know? So that was a situation I wanted to set up where this couple is going to have she has planned the perfect wedding. Nothing will go wrong. Very expensive wedding. At the Ritz-Carlton Hotel on Key Biscayne. And they arrive in Miami, which was their mistake. Biggest mistake they made was holding it in Miami, and everything that can go wrong does go wrong.
And it involves alcohol and strippers and all these sort of accoutrements of the traditional American wedding. But alternating are serious chapters about a woman who is being set adrift as she's escaping from Haiti to find freedom with her children. And in a way, I thought... Okay, I mean, this is Dave being serious and socially responsible, and you know, but in a way, I mean, it's part of the counterpoint of what Miami is as a city.
Yeah, what got me to thinking about that was I went to a wedding at the Ritz-Carlton on Key Biscayne. It's a beautiful place, and the wedding gazebo is out on the bluff overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. And it happens that Key Biscayne is a place where rafts come ashore, immigrants arriving in Miami that way, and it happens a lot. And I thought, what would happen if a wedding got interrupted by a raft? And that's what got me going. There are two kinds of immigrants that come by sea to Miami. The Cubans are allowed to stay because they're fleeing political oppression. Haitians are not because it's economic hardship. And so the law says they have to go back to Haiti. So in this book, it's a Haitian mom and her two kids. And she gets set adrift by pretty bad guys. Bad people who bring them over, pretty bad guys. And Seth, our groom, ends up rescuing them. He's wasted on the beach. This is not really the way he
not intentionally
his bachelor party was going to end, you know. Yeah, no, he doesn't intend to. That's the thing, and that's kind of the dilemma at the heart of the plot. Is Seth is a guy who's never thought about anything seriously. He's not a responsible person particularly. Tina is the one who's, you know, the cause lover and everything. He's just a guy happy to be there. And yet, in this wedding weekend, he ends up responsible now for this Haitian woman who doesn't want to be turned over to the authorities. And that is sort of the heart of it. And Tina, who ordinarily in the abstract would be totally sympathetic, not going to let this wreck her wedding, you know? So their roles are kind of reversed. And that's, as you say, that doesn't sound like a comedy anymore, does it?
No.
There's a lot of jokes in there.
But remarkably, it's very funny. I mean, you know, and it's also ultimately moving. And when you tie it all together at the end in a lovely bow and a groom's cake, you know, it's, there it is. It's, you've solved a problem of the world through love.
Through love. Yeah, it's kind of a surprise, a twist ending, which we're not going to give away here on the radio. People would have to buy the book. It's for sale.
The surprise ending is, in fact, included in the book.
No, that's actually the
well, it's an app, in-app purchase to get the surprise ending, and there's an in-app purchase.
They have to buy the gold version, gold package version, to make that get the actual ending of it.
That's actually kind of a brilliant idea. You know?
Well, there are a lot of books that I was supposed to have read in college that I always wondered, you know, how they end. Like, oh, I was an English major, so I was supposed to read Dostoevsky. I don't remember why, but he wrote long books, and I'm pretty sure I never finished them. And I would be thinking, I wonder if he finished them. You know, I think turn the last 50 pages would be blank. You know, Dostoevsky just passed out.
This page intentionally left blank. There's a... there are a number of hilarious set pieces in here, but the idea of, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, using chicken nuggets as a weapon.
And I don't know if this might ever really happen, but there is a boat chase involving a faux pirate ship. And there is one of those in Bayside Marketplace, which is a Miami tour. But there ends up being a chase, and the pirate ship, and which actually does exist, shoots this propane cannon, make a big boom. And I thought, what could you have on that ship that you could use to repel boarders? And I came up with the idea of chicken nuggets. So yeah, that is the weapon used in the chase. Yeah. That could probably happen.
Yeah. Just to give you an idea of the sort of the number of little subtle jokes that are planted throughout. Early on, for instance, Tina, it turns out, has been seeing a very high-powered lawyer who looks like Judd Law, and later Dave says, and so she dumped Jude Lawyer, you know, and it was nice. She made a little joke out of Jude Law's name.
Thank you. That's what I do for a living.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm explain.
Nice.
Like, you know how you talk on the radio,
right?
I make jokes. That's kind of my whole thing. That's what I do. And instead of having, neither one of us has a real job. Let's be honest, you know.
It was good, and of course there's a great mix-up of luggage, and now, all right, we have to talk about Trevor.
Oh yeah, Trevor. Well, okay, Trevor is an orangutan, and I got inspired by there's a tourist attraction in Miami called Jungle Island, and I don't know if you've ever seen an orangutan up close, but they are not lookers. You know, they're not the Brad Pitts of the primate world, but they've got very close together eyes and these giant cheek pouches, and they have beards, and that's the women. But they're kind of soulful animal, I like to include an orangutan in the book, and so I did some research on. They're interesting animals. They're smart. They're very, very powerful. An orangutan, a male orangutan, is like the strongest 10 men, or in my case, maybe 20 men. You know, and so Trevor, I had this idea where the groom Seth, at the beginning, lots of things are going wrong, little things before he's had the big thing go wrong, and among other things, he loses his wedding ring, which is he was entrusted by Tina, which is his valuable heirloom ring, and he loses it. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if somehow it wound up in the hands of an orangutan named Trevor? And so Trevor he was just going to be in that one scene, but he was so good in that scene, you know, he just killed it. You know, he took over the scene. So I kept him around, and he becomes more and more important as the book goes on and ends up having...
He becomes infatuated with one of Tina's sisters.
He's been in a cage for a long time, alone. He ends up falling in love with Tina's sister and another woman. He falls in love with... He's a very romantic figure. And if it does get made into a movie, you could play that part, Ted. Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd look so good in the little 1 inch of stretchy fabric that a lot of the women in this book wear.
Yeah, well, that's Miami. I don't know if you've been to Miami, but it's a place where people like to just reveal everything about themselves, so to the point where you wouldn't even need to take anything more off to have a complete physical examination. Just the way women dress, just to go to the supermarket. You mentioned Ridley Pearson, my co-author for the Peter and the Starcatchers books. Ridley came to visit me once, and I went to our local supermarket, public supermarket in Coral Gables. And it happens, it's also the supermarket used by the University of Miami. And so there's all these co-eds going on, and they do not wear a lot of clothing to the supermarket. And we're going around, you know, I got my shopping list, and I'm putting eggs in and stuff. And Ridley's just like bumping into things, looking around, and he goes, Is it always like this here? And I go, it's always like this here. He said, I would go to the grocery store all the time. I mean, like... Say, do we need salt? Do we need salt? We're running low. Running low on salt. I'll be right back. You know.
It's a curious place. You've got taxi drivers who claim to know where they're going, but never do.
A unique Miami thing for reasons I don't understand. Now, in most cities, the kind of the whole point of the taxi, and I think the way it works here, you tell them where you want to go, and they take you to that place.
That's the hope here, too. It doesn't always happen.
But that's the idea, right? They know in their head how to get where you're going. Seth's problem, when he and his groomsmen get out at the airport, get a cab, and this has happened to me, all they want to do is get to Key Biscayne, but the cab driver doesn't know where that is. He takes them instead to South Beach, which is also an island. It's a barrier island like Key Biscayne, but it's not the same island. You know, it's not like they're all the same. So, but
the thing about a wedding is everybody is supposed to end up in the same place more or less at the same time.
Correct. That is an ideal for a wedding, yeah. Certainly the bride and groom should be there. Although more and more, as I say, we don't necessarily need the groom.
What's a groom cake?
This is something I learned from my son's wedding. It's yet another way the wedding industry have thought up to make your wedding cost more than it already did. They claim it's an old Southern tradition, and I have to ask old Southerners, and they know none of them ever heard of this, you know. But it's like not just you should have the wedding cake that costs $9 trillion, but you should also have a special cake made for the groom, which is served at the rehearsal dinner, and that also should cost $9 trillion. So I set up a scene where Tina has got this groom's cake for Seth. Seth's parents, Rose and Sid, who are an older couple, have arrived, and they have brought with them a Tupperware container filled with brownies, which came from Rose's sister in California. These are special brownies that she feels she has a certain condition that requires her to take, you know.
And may even have a prescription for it.
And Rose and Sid have become deeply fond of these, you know, and they kind of use these brownies for everything. They keep them with them. They're afraid somebody will steal them if they leave them in the room. And just through one of those wacky things that sometimes happen in novels, these brownies get served along with the groom's cake to everybody at the rehearsal dinner, but nobody realizes what's going on. So that creates problems also. More and more and more problems.
I'm interested that the idea of getting an orangutan into your story just kind of showed up. I mean, do these ideas just kind of show up in your head like people, you know, passing by on the street? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's kind of thinking about the idea of a book. I mean, the first idea I had was a wedding. The second idea I had was immigrants show up at the wedding. Then I started thinking of characters, things that could go wrong. He loses his ring. And then I was at this place, and I thought, there's an orangutan. Well, you know, it would be possible if the suitcase were near the cage, the orangutan would get it. And how would I get the suitcase? You know, that's the way you think when you're creating a comedy novel. My idol in terms of plotting is P.G. Woodhouse.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
I just love the way he would have all those characters in Blanding's castle running around with nobody with a clear idea what was going on, everybody with different, you know, goals and you know, kind of bouncing off each other. So that's kind of like you just think, well, what could the elements be and how would they bounce off each other?
One of my favorite P.G. Woodhouse novels is Leave It to Smith, spelled P-S-M-I-T-H.
He would always say, my name is Smith, the P is silent.
So when people want to put a P in Thompson, I say, put it in the front, you know, as in ptomaine or pterodactyl or something. You know,
you don't have a T. You don't have a P.
No.
We could have like some kind of a fundraiser, get you one.
I was talking with the composer Virgil Thompson once. His name is spelled also correctly. And he was... And we commented on the spelling.
Yeah, where did because Thompson is...
It's more Scottish.
Thompson.
Thompson. It's more Scottish than English.
Yeah, why would there be a P put in there? Who did that?
The English.
Oh, I'm guessing the Germans had something.
You think the Germans?
They were responsible for a lot.
It turned out we had the same family joke. You're Thompson. Yeah, we're the Thompsons. We're the dry kind.
That was the joke, huh?
That was the joke. And I remember I told somebody at the San Francisco Opera about this, and they were appalled that this was the level of conversation that Virgil Thompson and I had had. It was like, what? You didn't? Well, anyway. So there's in here a lovely character, LaDawn, a stripper. When you had your son's wedding, did your son have a stripper at his wedding?
No, I can honestly say he didn't. But there, I have been to more than one bachelor party in my life, and I think this is maybe on the decline. I hope it is. But there was a period there when I was like in my 20s and 30s, when every time you would go, somebody would have hired a stripper. And usually it was like not what the groom wants. I mean, most of the times really not what anybody wants.
Seth keeps saying, I don't want a stripper,
if you've ever been, it's the most horrible situation in the whole world. You know, you're in some awful hotel room and everybody's drunk and then this woman shows up and you feel bad for her. Everybody, it's degrading for everybody. You know, like, I don't know why anybody would ever do it. So anyway, that's what Seth's groomsmen do to him. Right. But he fails to make it to the performance. She ends up kind of taking care of the Haitians in his room. It's not really the ideal situation.
Being taken care of in the groom suite at the Ritz-Carlton, yeah. You know, and it's really, it's kind of a sweet image.
Actually. Yeah, and at one point, Tina said, why are there Haitians in your room? You know, that's kind of the central problem they have.
Part of the publicity for this very funny novel, by the way, Insane City by Dave Barry, says... It ballyhoos that it's your first solo novel in 10 years. It's like, well, bravo for you.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I ended up writing all those young adult fiction books with Ridley, and then I wrote a book with Alan Zweibel called Lunatics. I was writing books with other people for a while there, but I really wanted to get back to writing. I mean, I had this idea kind of kicking around in my mind, so I got back to it.
So Peter and the Starcatchers is now a musical? Is that right?
Well, it became a Broadway play. Rick Ellis, the guy who wrote Jersey Boys, wrote the script, and it was fabulous. I mean, I can praise it because I really didn't have anything to do with it. But it sort of kept the story Ridley and I wrote, but instead of, you know, being an adventure story for kids, it becomes this very funny, very witty play for grown-ups with music in it. But it's not, they don't call it a musical because I think that puts it in a different category for the Tonys, you know. But it ended up winning 5 Tony Awards. It did really well. And so it's moving now from Broadway to off Broadway, staying there, staying in New York, and it's going to start touring the country.
Wow. To off Broadway.
Off Broadway.
How far off?
Connecticut. No. It's still in Manhattan Island, I think. I don't know.
Is there any other place you'd rather live than Coral Gables? I mean, or is it just like, this is what I know, they know me?
Well, I love it there, first of all. My wife is Cuban Jewish. She's Juban, they call themselves. My line is that they didn't take rafts over from Cuba, they parted the Caribbean. And there are thousands and thousands of them in Miami. There really are. But between the Cuban part and the Jewish part, I am... You know, in law to probably 90% of the human population of Florida. So there's no way that I could ever leave Florida.
How's your governor doing?
Oh, Governor Lizard. We don't elect normal governors. We have Rick Scott now. We're going to have Charlie Crist, who looks like a traffic cone, probably next. We are to politics. I don't know. You probably followed our last political election in Florida, where. After Barack Obama had declared victory and Mitt Romney had conceded defeat, there were still people waiting in line to vote in Miami. Like, waiting to vote for, I guess, the 2016 election. Maybe we'll get that done in time. We didn't know who won for like a week after, right. Even though we already knew everywhere else, but Miami, I mean, Florida didn't know. So I really, we have 27 electoral votes, and I really think we should give them to some other state that can use them, or even give them to like Belgium, you know? Just don't let us keep having them because we don't know what to do with them, you know?
Looking at it, what are the big political issues in Florida now? Is immigration then still one of them?
No, because everybody is an immigrant already, so we don't have a problem. Our big thing is foreign policy. Our Miami City Council has one, you know.
So does Berkeley, California.
That's true. Yeah, we're basically against Fidel Castro. I always say if there's a comet heading toward Earth that's going to destroy all human life on Earth, the Miami Herald headline would be "Comet heading toward Earth will destroy all human life." And the El Nuevo Herald, which is the Spanish version, would be "Castro may be dead soon." You know, that would be them.
Speaking of, there's an asteroid that I think in this coming week is going to come near to Earth, but miss it.
Saying that, you know, I think scientists make a lot of stuff up just to keep, you know, get the grants coming. Yeah. You know, like, because it doesn't seem like every 2 weeks there's another asteroid, and I never see them, do you? Like, oh, there's one. You know, no, you know. And the other thing is the particle, like the Higgs boson and stuff like that. You know, hey, we found another tiny particle, even tinier than the other ones we discovered. It's very important, this particle. We'll need a couple billion more to see if we can find another particle, but...
You heard about the two scientists who were discussing Higgs boson standing on a street corner.
This is a joke, isn't it? You're going to tell a joke. Go ahead.
And after a while, people start giving them money. They thought they were kind of crazy homeless people. Just kind of, you know, they collected, I don't know, $32. Just because that, wow, what did they talk about? That they were schizophrenic or something. It wasn't a joke, true story. Everyone's laughing but Dave.
But they're laughing.
It's a Higgs boson story, that's all.
They're laughing at my look at you. That's what they're laughing at.
So when you were sitting here thinking about Miami, does the Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau ever send you a thank you note for anything you write?
You would think they would dislike me because I generally suggest that Miami is an insane place. But I think they have come to sort of embrace that in Florida. When I got there, it was in the early 80s, and it was kind of the height of the cocaine cowboy era. And the big concern was that the image of Miami was, you know, on the part of the convention people and the tourism people, was that the image of Miami was that it was, you know, crime and drug-ridden place, you know. And they were always upset about it. They didn't like it when anybody talked about crime. And then along came a TV show that made everybody love Miami. That TV show, Miami Vice. What did it say? This is a place just full of drugs and crime, but it's cool, you know?
Speedboats.
Yeah, and so all of a sudden, that became cool. And Miami kind of figured out then, you know, we're never going to be Orlando. We're not going to compete as a family tourist destination. We're going to have that kind of exotic air of danger about it. And so you won't find, it's not like a town where if you make fun of it, the locals go, yeah, you're making fun of my town, right? They go, yeah, it's really nuts here. You know, I don't know what I'm doing here. They go, and that's the mayor. You know, like,
what do you have against Tilda Swinton?
Oh, no, I just refer to her as, she's the mom of the bride,
right.
Is this very kind of ice queen-ish looking person. And I just, when in the scene you're talking about, I describe her as looking like Tilda Swinton in, what was that? What she's in?
Narnia.
In the, you know, it's to the point where little children run away from her in malls.
Yeah.
You know, like the mean witch. That's her look. Beautiful but mean.
There are jokes in this book. Many per page.
We haven't even told half of them yet.
No.
Yeah.
And
the Higgs boson one again.
I think the plug, a dark comic masterpiece. There you are. Higgs boson jokes are not in this joke, only here on the radio show, it appears. Dave Barry, Insane City. Thank you very much for being on West Coast Live. This is Edge Thompson. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Try out others from West Coast Live. And we look forward to having you in one of our audiences one day. For more information, wcl.org.